Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed, Nicholas. Good to be here and good to see so many of you here. We're going to, the clock is ticking already, I see, so they don't give you much time, but we're going to talk about bank finance. And we have five bankers here from institutions who you'll recognize. What we did in terms of preparing for this presentation today was to move past the issues in the market. We've got very difficult markets out there, and therefore the conditions for bank lending today are as challenging possibly as they've ever been, certainly in the last 20 or 30 years. So we thought it was important to focus on two issues, and what we're going to do is to structure this in two parts. First of all, I'm going to ask the panel to give some comments on the factors which most influence decisions today in lending to shipping. And that's from the perspective of today, the way things look at the moment, which we acknowledge isn't great. Maybe with some cause for optimism in certain areas. And then we're going to talk about the future. How are things going to look in the future in terms of the shipping bank's participation in this industry, and what other what else will need to happen in terms of financing the industry going forward. So the first part is which factors most influence lending decisions in today's markets, and I'm going to ask Chris Conway from Citi to kick us off on that, and then we'll go on from there. Chris.
Thanks, Stuart. Banking is a boring industry, or often regarded as a boring industry, but it's also a very heavily regulated industry. And that regulation from external sources takes a number of forms. The national banks often provide oversight, and in US banks get examined by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, Federal Reserve, etc. There's also a shared national credit review that compares loans in one bank with the same loans in another bank. And the idea of these reviews is to make sure that there is decent processes, decent portfolio quality, and the bank's generally not going off the rails. But there are also reviews to ensure compliance with Basel. Basel is to banking what Brussels is to Brexit. The latest movement from Basel really began earlier this year with a consultation on the way internal ratings-based models are used to calculate risk-weighted assets, which in turn derives the amount of capital that's set aside for certain assets. Now, it seemed to the Basel Committee that there were some inconsistencies, there was variability in the way that risk-weighted assets were calculated. And I would venture to say that they would argue that if each of the institutions represented by the panel members here were to do a calculation on a single asset, the results might be slightly different. And that's because internal ratings-based models are just that. They are not prescribed models, they're derived internally. The conclusion of the after the period of consultation has been that there is too much variability in the output of these models, and that they're going to be standardized. And this is, of course, a precursor to Basel IV, I suspect. The commentators who responded to the consultation, for the most part, vehemently disagreed with the conclusions that the Basel Committee came up with. And I suspect that for non-US banks, the result will be higher capital charges for the same asset. And that will, if return hurdles are to be met, result for ship owners who are borrowing money in increased pricing. So watch this space, more to come, but the preliminary view is that that piece of regulation is going to have a significant impact on ship finance.
Thank you, Chris. I think the combination of Basel and IV probably makes everybody's hearts sink a bit. as well as for many of you, any suggestion of any increased pricing. So that really covers the external regulatory piece, and thank you, Chris, for that. Ilyas, why don't you lead us into a discussion about, you know, the internal regulatory or the internal regulations challenge which the banks are facing today, and if you could do that, that would be great.
Yes, thanks, Stuart. Clearly, internal policies, I would put it that way, and processes are very important nowadays. For example, the lending approval process that now takes place within every banking institution heavily depends on credit policy, compliance processes, profitability assessments, business approvals, and so on. I would start by saying that in the current environment of banks being heavily regulated, each of those processes is very important. But however, if I was to pick a couple and just dwell on them, I would pick credit policy and profitability assessment. I think credit policy is becoming, with always being at the core of lending decision making, is becoming even more important. And the reason being of the fact that the shipping industry, most of the subsectors of the industry, operate in a low earnings environment. So going back to credit fundamentals, focusing on credit metrics, and understanding the credit that you're lending to is becoming even more important than perhaps it was or people paid attention to before. I think secondly, what I want to say is risk assessment goes hand to hand with profitability. We bankers now operate in a low interest rate environment. Shipping depends on European institutions heavily in terms of lending, and European institutions typically not US dollar based, therefore higher cost of funds. So therefore, matching the risk-reward relationship is very important, and that can be a make or break with respect to lending decision-making process. And at that point, I just want to make a final remark, is that even though a lot of internal scrutiny is can require a lot of time for people, and it's difficult from both the perspective of the banker, but also from the client's perspective sometimes, it is important because it brings into the decision-making process discipline, and discipline perhaps has been an issue with the shipping industry historically.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So external and internal regulation, is two very important aspects of this whole debate. The other thing we focused on in preparing for this is the whole area around portfolio pressures on the banks. And I want Shartan, please, to lead us through that. Shartan.
Yeah. I think if you can find a bank that is willing to grow its portfolio today, I would like to know. I think most banks are struggling with what they have. I think banks have been growing with the market and the size of the market, whereby the volatility of the market is now hitting also banks' portfolios. And I think a share of banks' portfolios today would be in the equity area, where it shouldn't be. And that's a challenge for banks. I think banks are coping with that as best they can. Each bank is different and has different challenges. But you need to get through an absorption of what you have already on your books before you can even think of adding volume that would grow the portfolio. I think that in terms of portfolio size, which would affect new business volume-wise, banks need to cater for provisions. If the markets have fallen and your portfolio is stable, it means that debt as a percentage of market values has increased. And managing the provisions, which also is affected by the regulations that was also already mentioned, is also part of the challenges that banks have today, which will affect lending decisions. When you have grown, you are measured on nominal amounts. It's interesting to see that when you've grown too much, then suddenly profitability comes into play. And today, banks would go for profitability rather than nominal income. They need to show that they can deliver profitability to their shareholders. And that's also a point here. All banks are listed, and they are scrutinized by investors and analysts. And they need to show that their business model is sustainable. And that is today through profitability. This being said, I think most of the banks that you see in, at least on this panel, and you can probably count them on two, three hands, are long-term in this industry. And I can only speak for DNB, but the clients we have are the clients we want to invest in into the future. And that's where we focus the capital we have today. It's some get capital, most don't. And I think that is also a reflection of the work that is being done on banks on the portfolio side. But that's a comment on portfolio and the challenges we have.
Perfect, Shartan. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. One of the other areas that we're going to come on to talk to in this talk about rather in the second section is co-partnering, the banks working with other capital providers who've entered into the market, in the last 5 or 10 years or so, and reference to that has been made in earlier presentations this morning. Michiel, could you make a few comments on how you see, partnering, if I can call it that, being a factor today, and then later on we're going to come on and talk about the future, but talk about it from today's perspective, if you would.
Sure. Today's market, as Shartan also alluded to already, we only see, well, I think at best, two handful of banks still open in this European market for transactions. That's not enough. These banks are still there. We are currently joining a club of five European banks financing a European owner, and that's even slightly oversubscribed, so it's still possible, but it's more an exception than the rule. So the supply and demand balance of debt financing is definitely distorted. There's more demand for debt financing than the banks currently can deliver. Alternatives. There is of course some institutional money also in the form of bank debt sometimes joining transactions. Again, it's not much. It's definitely not gonna bridge the gap. We've seen on the equity side, we've seen private equity, of course, a few years ago, coming into the market quite actively and even aggressively. Today, we see that less so. We still see some private equity investments, fortunately, on existing tonnage or resales, which is, of course, much better for the market, with either no leverage or very low leverage. So that helps. Not every bank will be able to leverage a private equity investment, though. We're quite open to that. We can certainly do that, but I know that's not the case for everyone. We've seen more activities of Asian leasing money, Asian leasing structures, predominantly China, but also some Japanese structures. That's open for European owners as well, but we need to be mindful. It's open for the better names. These pockets of liquidity are quite credit sensitive, so it may not be there for everyone. And also on the ECA side, it's more Chris' expertise, but I also think the ECAs are becoming more credit sensitive, so more selective, therefore, who they work with. So it is tight to find funding for projects, for refinancing balloons, it is indeed important to keep looking for additional pockets of liquidity. But for that, shipping, of course, needs to become attractive. Take private equity again. There will be internal competition within those houses whereby shipping needs to compete with other sectors. And how appealing is shipping still today? So shipping will need to become appealing again, and then pockets of liquidity will open up again.
Thanks, Michael. That's great. Shatan, I think you had a comment.
Just one comment, because it's always easier to enter shipping than to exit. And probably it's easier to enter because then finally an intelligent guy who is long-term found a nice exit for you so that you could enter. And it's always important to have a long-term view in shipping. I think it's challenging, and I think a lot of investors have seen that, to enter this. It looks nice and easy, but to exit again is very challenging.
Yeah.
And the complexity of shipping is not what you see in the financials, it's what you don't see. It's operations, it's safety, it's environmental aspects, and often something that many investors don't take into account.
No, someone else needs to fund the exit, and of course, again, currently that's very tight.
Thank you very much. I want to move on in a second to the future, but before that, Jupp, do you want to add anything to what's been said already in terms of you know how things look, you know, which factors most influence your bank today?
Yeah, maybe a few things to add. I agree with most of the comments made. Sadly enough, 10 years ago, we sat here and everybody was asking us, is there enough money to fund the whole the huge order book? At the moment, nobody is asking that, but people are asking, how can you refinance me when the loan matures? And, you know, I'm not happy with that bond. Can you refinance me that bond? Working capital? So the type of capital we're looking at the moment is very different. Maybe it's good that there's not so much capital available because we don't need many more orderings. A few things to add. One is discipline. The second is sectorization. And the third is counter-cyclicality. I think as for a bank or an investor, now is the time to invest or to bank a number of projects. Because if you think anti-cyclical, it's now is the time really to build up a nice book if you're an investor or if you're a bank. So that's maybe a sad message, but that is how I think and see things. And that's how we actually act as a bank. We're doing many, many projects at the moment. We're very much open for business, and we like to grow our book because we have been very careful in the markets when there were a hype. Now is the time. Second is sectorization. You really have to know your client. You really have to understand the market. And I don't think that we all spend enough time to actually really understand what the client needs are. And if you do that well, a financing solution is just the end of the equation, and that can actually have many shapes and forms. Can be bank debt, but can also be other instruments. And the third is discipline. If you're disciplined in this market for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, then you don't make many mistakes, and you actually come to the conclusion that ship lending is, relative to other segments, a pretty good business. Actually, the losses are you know, relatively, I wouldn't say low, but relatively low compared to many other sectors. If you're in the offshore sector at the moment, that is a totally different story.
Excellent. Thank you very much. One thing I'd also like to throw out to you, and any of you can answer this question, but you know, in terms of the last 10 years, I mean, we've been through an interesting cycle. I would say certainly since 2008, and you know, what would you say the banks should have done differently? What do you see as the maybe the biggest mistakes, if I can call it that, that the banks have made in that 10 years? And as I don't want to spend very long on this, but I'm sure the audience would appreciate you know, a few thoughts on it. So any views on that?
I mean, it's difficult to answer that question in the context of each bank's portfolio, given we don't have the answer, but I think I came into shipping a bit later on. I came from a slightly different part of finance. where credit fundamentals were always at the forefront. So I think what banks could have done slightly differently is perhaps pay more consideration towards the cyclicality of the industry and try and find ways of mitigating that, whether this is through diversification of their portfolios or other mitigants or triggers. I think people were a bit too forthcoming with advance rates and lending historically. And I think that's probably one of the considerations that I would add.
Thank you. We can come back to that if we've got time. I suspect we probably won't have. But I want to talk now about the future, because I think at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. And the past is most definitely the past. And Shartan, I want you, if you would, to just kick us off on a discussion about, you know, how you see the future in terms of ship financing and the provision of ship financing by the banks who we've all come to know and to work alongside in financing the industry for the last 50, 60 years or so. So we're on to the future now, and Shartan, over to you.
It's a massive question.
Yeah, and you have 30 seconds, Shartan.
Yeah. I think if you look at bank capacity, it's lower today, and I guess it will be lower going forward than what we've seen in the peak days. But my point is to say that I think relative to other parameters, it may be as large as it was. If you look at market values today, they have dropped substantially. You can, with the same amount of money, finance more vessels today probably than you could a few years back. And I think that's one of the challenges. And to quote a famous artist, if only you knew how expensive it is to look as cheap as me, I think that's true for vessels today. And so that's one aspect which will actually adjust the capacity, not because capacity from banks is higher, but because what you need to finance is cheaper. I also think that the fleet is too big today. Unless demand creeps up substantially, ships or vessels need to disappear. So the demand may adjust accordingly because the need for financing will shrink because of that. Also, your point, Ilias, is a very good one in terms of what should banks have done. I think what we see today is that gearing is lower. I can only hope it will continue to be lower. I think banks should act like the best Greeks, which actually are counter-cyclical. They go move in and out. They are pretty cold-blooded when it comes to understanding the cyclicality of this industry. The challenge with banks is that they are listed companies again, and they grow when the markets are growing, and that's a challenge, and regulators are pro-cyclical. So I believe actually that the banking capacity will not be significantly different in the future, but it's not because bank capacity will grow or stay where we are today, but because other parameters will also adjust going forward. At least that's what I'm hoping for. I also think that banks will change, let's hope for as long as possible, where some companies will get capital, but most don't. And I think that will be will drive change over time if banks are disciplined. So I'm not too pessimistic. I think it's one of the most important capital sources for the industry, and this is a people business. You need to know who you're dealing with, and therefore I'm quite pretty optimistic, actually.
Great. And just moving on to the alternative capital providers, and the hedge funds, the private equity funds, and that ilk. What do we think in terms of the next 10, 15, 20 years? Will they put more money in? Will they head for the exit as quickly as they can and we'll never see them again? Or is it going to be something different? Michael, I think you were going to give some thoughts on that.
Yes, indeed. If you look at the alternatives to senior bank debts, which I described earlier in this session, it is of course very important for the industry that these players are long-term committed to the industry. And yeah, that's too early to say. I think typically what we've seen in the past, that these pockets of liquidity come and go. There's a trend, the private equity trend. Will that activity be stable for the next 10, 15, 20 years? I highly doubt it. It's typically something which comes and goes in terms of activity levels. I pointed to the Chinese leasing companies, the Asian leasing structures. Again, I think this is also cyclical. That may disappear again at some point in time. We have seen long-term commitment to the industry from a group of predominantly European banks, with the old American bank and some Japanese. But other than that, I think the alternatives, it's a question whether they are there for the long term. So I think the industry has no choice than to continue making itself appealing for senior bank debt. And Chartrand's points were very relevant in that context. The lower leverage required by clients will help. The industry needs to be more transparent, more corporate structures, discipline, discipline in ordering, of course, as well as in scrapping. It's those factors that will hopefully make the industry appealing again for bank debt. Because I personally doubt whether alternative funding sources have that same long-term commitment to the industry. Maybe as a side comment, there are of course some differences. We're here in Europe today, where the long-term traditional shipping banks are typically based. When you look at Asia, it's quite interesting that all the banks at this table will also have a desk in Asia looking at shipping there. So the same European banks that are active in their home market in Europe are also active on the other side of the world. With the exception of the Japanese, we don't really see that the other way around. So there's a lot of additional bank debt liquidity in Asia from local banks. Take Taiwan, for example, where international banks need to compete or work with local banks, but we don't see that same bank debt capacity in the same form coming back to Europe. So there's also definitely some regional differences, which makes maybe this part of the world even more important that shipping becomes an appealing industry again for the banks here.
Mikhail, thank you very much. I want to just jump in there and just invite Joep to make a few comments on the Asian banks. And Mikhail has sort of led us into a brief word on this. Do you see them playing an increased role, maybe in transactions, where their own jurisdictions have no relevance? That I think is a question.
It's a question better addressed to Michiel, because he has been in Singapore for a long time. But what I see from my experience is that there's a lot of liquidity in Asia ready to step into shipping. In particular, in the ECA, government-sponsored platforms, China Exim, Gay Exim, and the likes, insurance companies, and then the leasing houses, which are fighting over transaction. At least that has been the case. I think it slowed down a bit. However, recently we saw we arranged a large tanker transaction and found the money in China, and there are multiple examples of that recently. So I think there's definitely an interesting source of capital there. I think one other, you might find a bit less regulation in those countries. That's one thought. And, of course, they have to protect their own shipbuilding industry. That has been said by Martin Stopford before. That will just, continue. And I think what we also should not forget, has been mentioned before, is the sustainability drive to larger sustainability in shipping. So yeah, we saw the eco bulkers and tankers and containers and what have you. That was a fantastic ride for private equity, or at least to get private equity into the segment. I'm sure there will be new ways of attracting new capital and on the next sustainability idea.
Yep, thank you very much. Chris, I want you to, we haven't got much time left, but I'd like you just to say some things, make some comments about ECA coverage and, you know, the ECA's participation going forward. I think you've got some views on that.
Well, earlier this year, the beginning of the year, I'd asked the agencies in Asia Pacific whether they had specific targets for how much they were going to invest in shipping. And in some cases, it was up on last year. In other cases, it was static, which is a surprise to me, given that we could already see signs of weakness. But, you know, these are policy institutions, and in a way, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. They have to support the local industries, but when things go badly pear-shaped, they, of course, get criticized. I don't think it's any secret that the Korean houses are heavily criticized for what's going on with both the yards and some of the other privately owned companies there. And as a result, there's a hugely increased level of external oversight of what they do. And that has made them nervous. It has made them revise their own internal standards. And while it's still possible to get transactions done, it is not as easy as it might have been 2 years ago. As an example of the way they've revised their processes, I know that some of the Koreans have built out extensive internal valuation capability. So while Martin says in his earlier speech that they focus on price, I don't think it's so much a concern over whether the yards are pricing their sales correctly. It's more a question of, do they understand what the true commercial value is of the tonnage that's being delivered and built? In fact, I say that some of the agencies got criticized for the shipping, the ship sales being priced too low. Elsewhere, you see agencies that are taking big hits to their portfolio. They're honoring all their obligations. They know that there's a price to pay for being in this cyclical industry. They just absorb it and move on. And they're still open for good business. And there is good business to be done. I think that we have a view that's similar to ABN AMRO in that we have a finite target market and stick with that. And there's always new transactions to be done. But I do sense that there is a market pullback by the agencies, and they really want to know that there's cash flow visibility and reliable ownership. If things go wrong, that equity can be put in. So that's sort of a brief overview of the agencies.
Thank you, Chris. We had a few more things we wanted to cover, but we are pretty much at the end of our time, and I want to give you the opportunity to ask any questions of these panelists that you might have. So I think with that, if there are any questions, please go ahead now. Hans.
A bit of kicking the can down the road. Do you think that if there is a workout scenario that will go quicker in the downturn that has been identified at the moment? Interestingly, one of the European banks at a different conference in Asia said he was no longer a banker but a broker, taking ships in and then selling them if it didn't go fast enough.
Shorten, thank you.
I think generally speaking, I speak on behalf of DNB. I'm not sure how, I think each bank is different in some ways. You try to keep the company alive because that's the best option as a starting point. And then over time, you try to find solutions within that context. You, at least from our point of view, of course, if that doesn't work, then you need to go for other alternatives. But just taking the vessels as a first step is not necessarily the best option to preserve value. And that's probably why you see quite a few companies staying alive, although quite a few people would believe they should be bankrupt a while ago. And that's also why you may see that restructurings take more time than anticipated, because you actually make such an effort trying to find that solution to keep things going, because in reality it's probably the best, because banks also believe in the volatility of the market, and if you can get through, it's probably a better option. But one way of explaining it.
Thank you, Shartan. I'd like to invite the other panelists to answer that too, but I really think we don't have time. Do we have time for one more question, Nicholas? Or?
If you don't mind, one more question.
One more? I think a gentleman here.
When a bank has a big problem hanging over its investment banking arm, to what extent does that affect access to funding and treasury activities for the whole bank? And what knock-on effect does it have for activities like shipping?
I don't know who this question is directed to. I suspect it might be for me. I cannot comment on. First of all, I cannot comment on market speculation about what's going on with DB. All I can say is that, as I said at the beginning of my speech, cost of funding is an issue it's an issue for every European institution that these days, and clearly that plays a role in how we assess and review opportunities, and how. And in which transactions we could get into or not. Out of that, what I want to say is that we are in shipping, we've been doing this for 100 years, and we're continuing doing it.
On that note, thank you all very much on the panel. Thank you very much for listening, and sorry we overran. Oh.